Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of The Wild Hunt, the No Ship Network podcast on the History Channel television series Vikings. I am your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em. And tonight we are discussing Vikings Season 5, Episode 17, which is titled The Most Terrible Thing. This, of course, was written by Michael Hirst and directed by Helen Shaver.
I guess it'd be the opposite of The Sweetest Thing.
Yeah.
Most definitely. As we've been doing in our coverage, we are dividing it up by location, and our first location we are going to discuss will be Iceland.
Yay!
It had some surprising developments, if development is the word. It's more like unravelments.
Iceland is under unravelment?
It's all under the same pressures that Eivind's hovel is under. It's just falling apart.
That thing wasn't built very good in the first place. It was the very definition of shoddy.
Well, likely they didn't feel very good when they built it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were probably already sick and cold and wet.
And rushed. Yeah. Felt rushed to get it completed and, you know, cut a lot of corners.
So this we were all keeping our fingers crossed, hoping that Iceland would get more interesting. It kind of did, but now it's okay because it's pretty much going to have to go away.
It imploded.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
For anything, really, to implode.
To be there front row and watch it happen.
To break it down real quick. Floki, Flatnose, and Frodi continue their trek that we saw them embark on last episode. And they finally come upon and enter Eivind's crappy quarters.
So there's a tearful reunion at first.
Yeah, there's even embracing and all that. And then we cut to another location at that point, and then when we come back, we have Kettle basically revealing another side to him that we have not yet met.
Mm-hmm.
Frodi and Kettle unearth their buried hatchets, and they start killing Eivind's family members, starting with Eivind's wife.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even seem like this sort of passionate, blind rage. It's more of this cold, maniacal anger that's coming from Kettle.
Well, he suppressed it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like you said, unearthed is a good word for it.
It's because, diamond hard.
Yeah. All of those pressures of being a nice guy just really made this thing nasty. Mm-hmm. So the irony here that finally all of these people have lived without the benefit of people like Kettle and his family and Floki and his, we'll say air quotes, wisdom, went off on their own and they're just suffering for it. They're cold, they're weak, they're sick, they're dying. And then, so because of all that, they've seen the error of their ways. They're ready to change. They've honestly made a change of heart, and now they get killed. Now mm-hmm. they're going to die. So they live long enough to see that they were wrong, and now they get the axe.
Is there a moral to this story?
I'm trying to find one. I'm trying to find that. Like, all I can think of is that if you're all pieces of crap, then you're going to be pieces of crap in Scandinavia just as easily as you are in Iceland.
Hmm.
So
wherever you go, there you are.
Right. Exactly. So you can't run away from your problems. You can't run away from the dynamics of humanity. You mm-hmm. can't go to other places and make it work. There's something to be said for tabula rasa, right? You know, mm-hmm. people should try to do that in their lives. We all probably just tried to do it at the beginning of the year with New Year's resolutions and such.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the end of the day, you know, your change has to come from within. I don't want to sit here and sound like Tony Robbins, but, you know, you have to make these things happen. It's not enough to get on a boat and go somewhere different. The same dynamics are going to start to play themselves out mm-hmm. eventually. I don't know if that's a moral or a lesson, really, but it's on display for sure. But I feel like I already knew that, and I feel like this would have been a whole lot better. I feel By and large, Iceland has felt like a device for me to where they've kept Floki busy when they didn't have a place for him in the main other story arcs mm-hmm. that are going on. And so I would have rather have him just do a walkabout like Thorin did mm-hmm. after her face got all messed up.
Well, maybe we need to see him go through some sort of trauma such as this because he's going to be a changed man
mm-hmm.
that's going to maybe end up with Ivar, and Ivar's going to be startled with the man that he thought he knew.
Okay, that would be worth it to have him have an effect, because I do feel like he's going to go back to Kattegat mm-hmm. after this.
Because it probably wouldn't be enough for us as viewers to have him go on a 8-year walkabout like Ragnar did.
Yeah.
Without knowing what happened.
True, because that
and
was...
have him be so significantly changed from the fanatic Floki that we knew.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you think back to what happened to him after Paris, after his failure there. that would have been enough. So the whole thing, to me, I think you're right about this is more impactful to Floki's story arc than it would be if he just, you know, went on that walkabout, like you said, for however many years it took till he was needed back in the main body of the story. Because I remember how irksome that was to see Ragnar come back after this big time jump, and you have no idea what he did that whole time. And I'm sure we made some jokes about it and had some goofy speculation, but for reals, we don't know shit. He was just gone, and then he showed back up. So I am glad that we at least will have an impetus for some sort of sea change in his world point of view.
Yeah, because he's pretty much have been betrayed by this family, because he says to Kettle, when he's pleading with him to spare Helgi's life, he says, "You made me believe. You convinced me to start believing again," or something along those lines. But, you know, Kettle was operating falsely.
Well, I feel like they were ready to just let these people go off and die, because I don't think anybody thought they were going to leave and be more successful than the base camp, right? So then when Helgi comes back a few episodes ago and says, "Hey, please, we need your help," or whatever, that's when it got dredged back up. And it's like, okay, here's our chance. If they're still alive, we need to finish them off.
So Kettle would have just continued to be this peaceful person if it wasn't for the fact that...
Probably. That's what I think.
The out of sight, out of mind thing.
Yeah.
And continue. Okay.
Because I think he would have assumed that, like, okay, just desserts have been served. They've been kicked off the reservation. Mm-hmm. They have to go their own way, and they're not going to make it. They're going to die in the elements, you know, cold and starving, or with some sort of disease.
But it was Kettle's decision to go back, that he could have just said, "No, we're not going back."
But I think, yeah, you're right. He could have. But that's like, I think just seeing Helgi when he came back was what unearthed it. And then that's when he kind of started being conniving about it. In a way, I say conniving just to mean that he hid his true intentions.
This is still a betrayal in Floki's eyes.
Yes, yeah.
And then when he talks to Eyjord later and tells her everything that happened, and then he, in an accusing manner, says, "You know, you never really ever saw the gods." Mm-hmm. And she doesn't confirm it verbally, but her body language does, and he seems almost tearful.
I think it does feel like to him that it's a big waste of time. This whole thing has been a waste of time, energy, and human life.
Well, I think he's broken, though, at the end, too. It's more than just a waste of time. The thing he held on to the most was his beliefs in the gods, and there was, this was basically the nail in the coffin for that. It's done now for him, I think.
Yeah, so are you putting forth that we're, like, coming to yet another, like, symbolic death for the Viking culture? Because Floki has always been the god's biggest advocate.
Yeah.
And so if he's really losing his faith this time, and it's not just kind of shaken... Mm-hmm. He's really losing it, then he's this has larger import for the story as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, this episode opened up with the burying of Æthelred, so then here we have, for Floki, his beliefs being put to rest as well. I mean, even in the Iceland location, we have a discussion between Eivind and Helgi, and Eivind's basically saying, "It makes no matter, we're meat anyway, that's all we are." And that's a desolate belief system. There's that lax belief.
That's nihilistic, isn't it?
Yes, very. Yeah. I mean, of course he would be at that point.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't blame him. But yeah, so I think you made a good case for that. Yeah. So I'm on board with that idea. And you know, another thing too is like, I don't necessarily know how I feel about capital punishment in our society, but one of the best defenses I've heard for it, the reason why it exists, is because when you have like tribal societies, if you don't kill the person who's responsible for something when they've done something really bad, like Asbjorn killing,
right,
you know, Helgi's wife, I can't remember her name at this point, but that what happens is, because there's no justice that's served, one family goes and then does revenge killings, then somebody else in that family feels compelled that they got to get their brothers and cousins and go and do revenge, and it never stops. Mm-hmm. It just goes back and forth until it escalates, until the one person's death has now begat hundreds of people dead. And so, like I said, not advocating for or against, but that was a defense of it that I've heard. So if Floki knew, because who had killed her, if he had just made sure that everybody knew this person was responsible and had them killed, could that have headed all of this off? So it kind of makes a little bit of, in a microcosm, a case for tough leadership in the now makes for a better future. Because he tried to go the route of like, well, let's just not punish anybody like that, but send all of these people away, and then everybody's going to end up dead.
Yeah, I mean, there could be another thread that's within this episode where we have a couple of commentaries on leadership happening.
Yeah, because there's some good leadership happening, and there's some horrible leadership happening.
But I think even though it seems desolate, I don't think it's completely desolate, because at the last time we see Floki, he blends in with the land. Like, his cape actually blends in with the landscape. And even his shiny bald pate looks like a rock, you know, that's got sun glinting off of it. And somehow this gives me this positive idea that he is still the beginning of Iceland. This is where the Viking culture is going to transform and still retain some of itself, Floki being that seed planted there. In order to have a new beginning, you have to have that death. It's like a cycle thing. So I think there was something that died and something new has been born, but it's, you know, still hard to see.
Yeah, maybe we won't see the full shape of it.
Maybe
like,
not.
Like in the remainder of the series, it might not come to fruition, but we know that it's going to be there.
But, you know, to end with him kind of out in the landscape, blending in with it, you know, prior to Kettle losing his shit, like he had berserker mushrooms in his trail mix or something on the way there. Right before that, you have Floki standing outside of Eivind's place and he's looking out over the water. And you see that iceberg out there. And I wondered if he was thinking about Kattegat. So maybe that's something that now has been kind of put behind him. I don't know. But I'm putting stuff on that. But,
well, you know, it's fun to speculate.
Yeah. Trying to figure out how the landscape figures in.
So question then, next episode, if we get a scene in Iceland at all, because I know some, you know, there's been at least one episode, I think episode 5, that didn't have it at all, but there was a lot going on in Wessex at the time. Do you think if we see Iceland that it's just going to be people getting on boats and going, all right, let's get the hell out of here? I mean, there's only one woman left, right? Alive. And
yeah, I don't know, because there's all those nameless people that keep popping up when you don't like, you think there's only three people involved.
Yeah.
You know, when they left Floki's camp to head to Eivind, it only seemed like three people or four people were with them. And then when they get to Eivind's, it seems like that same number of people were there. And then when they're heading back, there's like 20 and they're all dressed the same and you can't.
They're faceless. It's there just to serve the mechanics of that part of the story, because you need that many people when they're like, because you have two guys grabbing Eivind and bringing him outside, but you still have Kettle and Frodi talking to each other, and then Floki off to the side. So who's the guy holding the knife to Floki's neck? Who's doing this? Who's doing that? So they kind of appear when needed and disappear when they're not part of the story. It's awfully convenient.
I mean, where were those people when they were all feeding on Ludafisk?
Yeah.
Last episode.
Yeah.
And are they family? I don't know who they are.
It definitely feels like one of those things that's not meant to bear up under podcast style scrutiny. So, you know, when you get to that, you just kind of have to go, all right. So anyway.
And is there anything else that
we
you would
did
wanna
discuss? The way that Floki said Eivind, right?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess we should talk about her manner of death too. Eivind kills herself and Floki witnesses it. And it was very reminiscent of The Last of the Mohicans to me. In fact, I knew when she was standing there, I was like, oh my gosh, we're about to get The Last of the Mohicans scene. And we did. And then Floki's watching, and the way when he shouts her name, for English speakers, at least I can speak for me and for Steve, it doesn't translate very well. It just sounds like somebody moaning in pain.
Yeah. The next scene we're going to go to is York. And it's kind of cool because the song that Kettle is singing as he's merrily killing everybody, mm-hmm. that has the refrain,
he wasn't merrily killing them.
Okay, well, he was singing while he was killing them. I think he was taking a little bit of enjoyment in this because it's that revenge. And it's a dish best served cold. And it's definitely cold and rainy mm-hmm. out. So maybe merry's not the right word, but there is... subtract that word and add in the word satisfaction mm-hmm. in whatever sense that would be. But the song he's saying, cold is the ocean spray, your death is on its way. And all of the troops who are sort of sparring with each other and play fighting and getting ready for battle in York, and along with Bjorn, are singing the same song when they came to it. I didn't realize it till second viewing, but that was kind of a nice touch.
So do you make anything of that? Are we supposed to think, is that supposed to draw a line from Iceland to these guys here?
I don't see what that could possibly be outside of just showing that there's still this nice little piece of shared culture. Like somebody's remembering a song and maybe missing their homeland while, you know, and they're singing that in Iceland. And then these right. people are singing it in York,
right.
which is not their homeland either. So maybe there is a parallel. Maybe it's a song that you sing when you're on foreign shores and you're trying to get your, you know, gusto up to do the things that Vikings do. That sounds maybe a little weak sauce, but it's all that I can really come up with.
Yeah, something that links to Vikings diaspora.
There you go. Yeah.
So this is being sang by Viking warriors as Bjorn is making his way through that crowd, or just it's York, and I guess everybody's just kind of doing their thing out in the city square. Whatever floats their boats happening.
Is this like morning calisthenics for everybody? You just get up and start. Grab the sword and the shield and just get to bang.
Well, there's weapon making happening and yeah. right and other things. And so it just seems like daily work mixed with, you know, sparring, which Gunnhild is the star of currently and Harald's watching with pleasure.
The physicality of her is, mm-hmm. it's pretty daunting. I mean, we've seen plenty of shield maidens over the course of however many seasons. And we've seen lots of women in battle. But to me, she is probably, if not one, I mean, if not the, at least one of the most imposing. I mean, like, even Lagertha doesn't possess that same kind of build and physicality. So her presence on the battlefield, she's deadly as anybody, of course. But there's this almost like feline grace to the way that she's doing things sometimes. But, you know, Raga Ragnar is the actress who's playing her is just like, man, she's out there with the biggest of the guys just slamming shields together and clanking swords. It was impressive.
You know, I've been thinking and saying on our podcast that I think it's going to be Lagertha that dies in England. Mm-hmm. And her remains are going to be that Viking shield maiden / warrior that's found. But what if it's Gunnhild?
I could totally see that. I could totally see that. Who's going to kill her? I mean, I guess somebody could. I mean, it's going to take like 4 or 5 people. Mm-hmm. She's going to have to go down like Heckman.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I just don't see anybody taking her out easily.
Well, Harald will take her out to dinner.
he's such a softy.
He's going to have to work for it. As Harald is watching Gunnhild amorously, that's when Bjorn approaches him. And it's almost like Bjorn sees his opportunity. And I don't know if this is something that has been discussed between him and Gunnhild prior. Maybe it was staged. Maybe she knew that she should go out there and show off her stuff so Bjorn could have this opportunity to talk to Harald and make this bargain.
Totally plausible. Totally plausible. Because if you look at everything that happens in York, it starts off this way with those two doing some stuff, and then it ends with those two doing some stuff.
Right.
And then there's some stuff in the middle. And it's all important, but if you look at it through the lens of them orchestrating it, I could totally buy into that.
I know this is like a later scene, but you know how she's looking in the three mirrors when Harald comes up to talk to her? So she's not duplicitous, she's triplicitous.
Triplicitous.
Yeah.
Now you are making up words. But he starts to lay it on thick and she's like, you had me at skull. All right. Back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Okay, so Bjorn claims he had a dream about Ragnar here. I don't believe him at all.
I don't either, because it feels like we should have seen that.
Well, maybe they couldn't get Travis Fimmel to come back, but they could just make him in shadow like they did with Athelstan last half season with Alfred, right?
Right.
I mean, there's ways around that. But I think Bjorn is just trying to get the upper hand somehow and using the power of Ragnar to do that. I don't think Harald buys it. You know, it's not till the Gunnhild element's introduced that it becomes more convincing for him.
Well, it's like he's being, it's the, one of the, what do they call those? The honeypot traps or whatever.
Yeah.
That it seems like that, because he's basically saying, listen, you're the king. You got to make all the decisions here. But what we really need to be doing is catching Ivar off guard. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the wrong season for that. And it's like, well, my dad told me that it was going to be fine. So let's just go.
I know you're talking storms, man, but Ragnar said we'll get safe passage. I can't prove it, but he said it.
You just got to trust me. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the fact that the deal is going to remain the same, that Bjorn will take over Kattegat, but Kattegat will be given over to Harald once Bjorn is dead. And then he can tussle with Gunhild over the idea of whether she wants to become his wife now or what's going to happen.
You know, I don't know how much Bjorn has in mind for Kattegat. Maybe he just wants to win it, take it from Ivar, and whatever really happens after that, maybe he doesn't really care. If he dies taking Kattegat, even if Harald ends up with it, because Kattegat, he probably believes, was his mother's, and now his mom's missing.
Mm-hmm. So he's kind of trading on Ragnar's name, but he's doing this for his mother.
I think so.
Okay, that's good. I like that. I can actually sets me more at ease with this whole scenario, because I'm not really sure why he was doing it. I mean, you could say like he wants to take Kattegat back from Ivar, and we've had some arbitrary decision making from Bjorn in the past, let's be real, but I felt like I needed a little bit more of a good reason behind all this, and that fills in the blank for me. So I kind of feel like Harald is like Landale Carissian. He's like, this deal's getting worse all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like, what's next? You know,
he's so tired of the Ragnarsons.
he's tired of the Ragnarsons that he can't control. I'm sure if it was just Magnus around, you know, he would be able to.
Right.
You know, and when I say Magnus, I mean Ragnarsons in air quote. But we talked about it before. He can control him. He's a little bit of a figurehead. He can use him as a rallying point for the troops. But Bjorn's a whole different story.
I do like when Harald says in response, what an exciting world we live in. I feel like that's part of Harald's success, is that he's so open to things. You know, he doesn't have to try to control every moment.
Yeah.
He lets things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of risk taking, I think, is a large part of his success and why he eventually becomes king of all of Norway.
Yeah, because if you have too many rules, you have too many precepts that you're trying to follow, you're going to get tripped up by it. His one rule is, I will be king of Norway, all of Norway one day. The road that I take to get there, it might go a little bit this way and a little bit that way.
It might be circuitous.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned weapons making before, and Bjorn is pounding out a sword, and then he quenches it and everything. And this was a cool scene for me. It was real quick. It's maybe like all of 10 seconds, but I liked it for two reasons. The first, because he usually uses an axe. And so now he's switching over to the sword.
That's interesting. I mean, that fits with the theme of everything this episode.
And Lagertha uses a sword. So I wasn't thinking about that till you mentioned that. What I was thinking more is like, what I had in my notes that he usually uses an axe, but it also reminded me of the Lagertha stuff is probably the more important, but it reminded, like, Bjorn reminded me of Perrin from Wheel of Time at this point.
Yeah.
Because I remember in one of the mid books, probably like 6, 7, or 8 or something like that, there's a scene where he's in some town somewhere, maybe Kyrian, I'm not sure where it was, but he's pounding out the sword, and it's like it reminds him of being back in
Because he becomes an apprentice for a while, and that was a big part of his story.
Right. And that's the path he would have taken if he had stayed and they hadn't all gone out doing what they did.
I remember that. So I like the connection to Lagertha, though. That's
teamwork.
Awesome.
That's teamwork right there.
Yeah. But that makes me more sure of you know, what he's saying about Ragnar choosing him. I don't think he believes it. I don't think he cares.
Yeah, I would agree on both. I would agree on both, because I think it is obvious that what Harald was saying is that everybody knows that he loved Ivar and he chose him. That's true. He
is
did.
It?
They had that relationship towards the end. He's the one who he picked to come to England with him on that last jaunt. So just based on that alone, you know, I don't think he really. I think Bjorn is probably the one that he liked the most, because
I don't know.
They had a longer time to have a relationship, I guess. But
I think he thought Ivar just needed the most guidance out of all of them.
Well, he didn't.
He needed something positive, and he.
Too bad it
wasn't. He finally had some time and was able to give something to Ivar that he hadn't been able to give to all those years, and he needed it the most, man.
Yeah, it didn't sink in, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, maybe some of it did, thank goodness, because he could probably be way worse.
True. Yeah.
Okay. So now we're at that scene with Gunhild, where she's stroking her hair while gazing at herself in three mirrors. Harald lurks in the background. Is he waiting to be noticed, or is he hoping to not be noticed? But she notices him.
He's all, what's up, girl?
And he says he's there because he wants to remind her that fate has brought them together.
It's almost like he's saying, remember how we had that conversation on the boat, and I was pretty sure you were saying that one day you're going to be with me. Now you're kind of with this Bjorn guy, so what's going on? Yeah. Like, he's feeling that out in almost as many words, but not quite.
Yeah, and I think he's still deciding if he's going to give Bjorn those ships, even though he said, Bjorn, Ironsides, you'll have those ships. He wants to kind of test to see what her... he's checking her temperature right now.
Yeah, because if she's...
is this all going to be worth it?
Yeah, exactly. Because if he gets the impression that she's going to be like, oh no, I'm head over heels for Bjorn, and if hell or high water, if he dies, I'm gone. I'm out of here. And then he's going to be like, maybe not.
So she gives him the affirmative, but not probably in the way that he would want, but it still would be a deal for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason why she would acquiesce to any sort of relationship with him is because he's got ambition to be king of Norway, which would make her queen, and that's attractive to her.
I like when he says, we are always the same, we just pretend to change. And this is, there's a few other echoes of this, like later on, or there's a few other echoes of this in this episode, or at least one where Kettle says to Floki, he says, we are as the gods make us. You know, why are we going to try to be different than that? And then it also harkens back to Rollo talking about being a snake.
Yeah, I think about that quote all the time.
Yeah, and keeping the same. You might shed your skin, but you keep the same pattern or something along those lines.
Right.
So there's this theme that, like, I think we're being told by Hearst to just keep an eye out, because everybody's goals and aims are what they have always been, but they're going to try to be different things to different people to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like she's telling Harold, in light of that, I feel like she's telling Harold what he wants to hear right now to help Bjorn along, because she really is smitten with Bjorn.
Well, do you think it's the thrill of the game for her too, that somebody would conquer all of someone would conquer all of Norway? And I mean, because she basically says to Bjorn, like, he could try
right
to make me queen. Is it?
So are you asking, like, is she having fun with the notion and maybe basking a little bit of the ego of the notion that this person could be doing all of this for me?
Well, it's got to be a thrill to it.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, nobody, no matter how perfect a character you can try to craft, and I'm not saying that's what Hearst is trying to do with her, but no matter how much their egos can always be appealed to, unless you're Buddha, I guess.
I mean, do you think that she loves Bjorn?
I do. I believe that she... My take on this right now is that her and Bjorn are in cahoots, and whatever she's doing with Harold is trying to feel him out to take his temperature to see, like, how much he's going to be willing to play ball to. Because she's with Bjorn, and she wants to help him attain his goals. I believe she loves him.
But she doesn't say it back.
She doesn't.
Do you think she does?
I don't remember. I don't think. Yeah, you're probably right. But it's a. I think the feeling is there, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think the feeling is there, and I think she wants him to come forward with it first.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any thrill for her to have Bjorn Ironside, one of the most famous men, never have felt like he loved a woman until her, and actually say it to her?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, she's got to be eating that up.
Oh yeah.
You can't blame her. I mean, she just came from being, like, doted on by the guy who is, you know, in everybody's minds, and it's probably going to be the king of all Norway at some point. Then she's in bedchambers with this guy, like, and everything you just described.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's just...
I guess I bring that up because I'm trying to just, like, figure out if she really loves him or if it's more about conquering.
Mm-hmm. I'm going with she's got some genuine feelings for him. I could be wrong about that, but we'll see.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion yet. I just know I hate that dress.
Well, it's like you said, she cleans up well. She looks really good when they...
She does. She looks really nice. But I don't like the dress. I personally think it's an ugly dress. My dad liked it immediately.
It was unflattering, I think. I think she could have found a much better looking dress. Because I think of, like, when, you know, some of the stuff that Lagertha has worn or Torvi has worn, you know, or even like Judith at some point in the past. And it's very flattering, but this is just kind of like, you know, I didn't care for it too much.
It looks all like almost like a prom dress, which is like what somebody could feasibly wear to a prom these days.
Ugh. So did you catch any parallels between Bjorn and Ivar, besides obviously having the same dad in this scene, because of the way Bjorn is wishing he was a little bit romantic. He's wishing that he had a heart like Harald's. And you don't want a heart like Harald's, though, because, you know, you're going from doomed romance to doomed romance. But yeah. he doesn't realize that. And he probably thinks the grass is greener. But, you know, Ivar tells Freydis a couple episodes ago that the only person that he's ever loved and whoever really loved him, he thinks, is his mother, until Freydis. So here's Bjorn. We make the assumption about the love for his mother. But then he says he's never really loved anybody else. Conceivably, other people have loved him. I feel like Torvi did. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like Thorin did. Mm-hmm. But he's never reciprocated. So here he is just being emo Bjorn, really, because for the first time he has those emotions and he doesn't know how to process them well.
So where's the parallel to Ivar that you were leading up to with this?
Because they both feel alone in this world. And the only person that they know for sure that they had this reciprocating love relationship with was
their mother.
So he even says, like, and it's almost like it's not parallel so much as it is inversions of each other. But there's some similar stuff going on, mm-hmm. because Ivar's never been with anybody. And Bjorn's been with a lot of people, by his own admission and from what we've seen. And so, but at the core of it, they feel like they've been alone until they meet this one person. And for Ivar, it's Freydis. And for Bjorn, it's Gunnhild. It might be a little tenuous, but I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Yeah, I like that sort of reflectiveness that you're describing between Bjorn and Ivar, which, you know, we've had a couple of scenes with mirrors in this episode, so it's nice to have that.
When he said he was alone, naked, and afraid, your reaction was kind of, you were like, ugh.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I like Bjorn being deep and thoughtful, but for some reason I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I've got issues.
I don't, you know, I think there's just levels, because, you know, like, women talk about liking to see a little bit of vulnerability in a guy, but then it can go overboard too. You don't want to maybe see too much, and maybe that was just too much for you, you know, yeah. from how long you've been with this character.
Yeah, I guess that's another thing. You've got things that are surprising you with people, not just Kettle. We got Bjorn surprising us as well.
Who's next? Who's going to show their, like Cyndi Lauper's going to have to score one of these episodes with True Colors.
Yeah. I see your true colors shining through. So York ends with Harald seated and contemplating. Mm. So I think, you know, this scene is meant to show us that Harald's sitting on something that we're not aware of.
Yes.
He's got more planned, and there's going to be some shenanigans coming from his corner.
I would be disappointed if that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be the Harald that we know and love, or we know and like. How about that?
Yeah. You know, one thing I do love about Harald is that he's a Viking who has a falling in love problem.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't think that would be a thing. Like, it seems paradoxical, right? That
like, I don't even know if falling in love is the right... He's just got an infatuation problem. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, he sets his sights on these women who are either unattainable altogether, or what he has to do to get them is like Greek mythology level, you know, hard to do.
Yeah, he's got to go on an odyssey.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. So
we are now leaving York and heading into Kattegat.
The NPR voice.
It gives you shivers.
Yeah, like when people talk like that, it's almost like they're afraid they shouldn't be talking about stuff.
So we have a dramatic lead into Ivar presiding over what I think is his first thing. Mm-hmm. And he gives a speech about how Kattegat has changed. It's bigger. It's a large trading post compared to what it used to be back in Ragnar's day. And speaking of Ragnar, Ragnar gave him responsibility over Kattegat. And all this means that since things have changed, that their ruling system has to change and voting has to go to the wayside. It's no longer the best option in the decision-making over Kattegat, according to Ivar. Mm-hmm. And he states that he alone has a duty to protect Kattegat. Therefore, these rules must change. So going forward, it's going to be up to himself and people he trusts who will vote on land issues, matrimonial matters, and murder inquiries. In the meantime, though, it's time to find out those who are against Ivar and his rule. They say that he's the enemy, but it is they who are in fact the enemy. And he asks the audience, do you want me to destroy them? And they begin to chant, and they're chanting alternatively Ivar and Odin.
So I can't help but feel like Hurst is throwing in some commentary here, you know, about certain things. And it's like there's shades of different leaders that you can see in
right.
in what he's saying. There's I remember the quote, like, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, and he says, You're either with us or you're against this kind of thing. And then there's the whole idea of only I can solve your problems. Only I can make that work. And that's kind of reminiscent of a current leader. And then you've got, like, going further back into, like, Stalin, you know, mm-hmm. like, pretty much
Gulag.
Yeah, like your neighbors, your friends, mm-hmm. your relatives, the person in the next room is going to tell on you because you're not the, so there, it feels like there's going to be, like, purges coming up or something like that. So I think it's pretty interesting that instead of just doing it as a spot on thing and dating it, he kind of weaves a lot of this paranoid leader thought into and just distills it into Ivar, you know, throws a bunch of ingredients into that.
Well, think about how scary that would be, because I mean, here they are suddenly transitioning from what is a democracy where they have the right to vote as mm-hmm. a people, and because they have this new leader, that's no longer the case, and now people who have been able to exercise their opinion up until this moment, maybe voice their thoughts out loud, they are now going to be subject to terror, most likely death.
Yeah.
A horrible death. Imagine if that happened here. Like, you know, people who have tried to have political discussions with you that maybe weren't on the same page with you, and you've had to voice your opinion. Well, you know, if that became the case, like, how yeah. many people would know that you are the enemy?
Well, with social media, it'd be pretty instantaneous.
Oh, yeah,
it wouldn't be hard to do for the authorities if they felt like they had the power to come get you. They'd just be like, all right, that person, that person, that person, that person. There'd be a list generated pretty quick.
Well, this makes it even scarier.
Yeah. You know, this is another thing that's pointing to me feeling like Ivar's going to be either killed off in the next season or half, or like this season or the next half season, or deposed from power and made to be like another character who has to try to find their way through life rather than, you know, being a leader anymore. Because I think that's just too much, too fast for these, you know, you can't just change the fabric and the nature of society with one leader.
I made the comment as we hit play on the episode when we watched it prior to recording tonight, because his face is the face of this season.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot to hang upon him, though, at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I agree. So do you think that's, like, telling for the last three episodes of the season? Or do you
Possibly.
Think that that's just a mistake?
I mean, it could have more to do with 5A, season
True.
5A.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he didn't actually get that makeup, though, until 5B. So
yeah, maybe there'll be more you know. In store.
It is, though. It could just be, though, that it's a striking image. And
right.
so it kind of looks good up there, because I don't know what else. I would rather see that than, like, Alfred's face, I guess. Even though he's playing a huge part in this, it wouldn't feel right, you know. So
we have a quick moment of his Fitzurk meditating. So this lets us know that he's still exploring the Buddhist philosophy, and which leads into Ivar ruminating out loud about Fitzurk to Freydis, and he thinks that he suggests killing Fitzurk, which she disagrees with. In fact, she tries to encourage him to be a merciful god. And she says, wouldn't you rather be loved than feared? And he responds with, I don't know. I'm not sure. And this, again, got me wondering about her. What is her aim here? I mean, the fact that she's trying to turn him away from killing Fitzurk, first of all. And she goes even further by trying to encourage him to be more merciful, to try to encourage his followers to love him. Is she out to destroy him, or is she just out to provide him inspiration?
I think she's
set him on a good path. I don't know.
I think it's none of those. I think what she's trying to do is this is her ticket. You know, she latched onto this guy. She felt like there was somebody that she could, like, manipulate into a position, and she did. She got to be his wife, and she tricked him into thinking he's a god, and then that she's having his baby, and it's going to be a divine baby, and the whole blah, 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 9 yards. And so she's got the easy life now. she doesn't want to ruin that. So she's actually pretty smart, and she's giving him good advice as mm-hmm. far as leadership is concerned. So I may be reading into too much subtext that may or may not be there, but okay, if she tells him and says, don't kill Fitzurk, that's a bad idea. It's a bad idea because it is. Because as much as he thinks that's going to go, well, who would dare stand against me? That's one way that people could look at it. But how many other people are going to be going, how legit should we take this guy? He tells us he's a god and he kills a Ragnarsson, even though it's his yeah. brother, for no mm-hmm. reason. Mm-hmm. You know, that's bad. That's bad juju right there. And then to say, like, look, wouldn't you rather have your people love you than fear you? A leader should always want their people to love them rather than to fear them. You know, you want a healthy level of respect, especially in that time and age, but you also want them to love you because you're going to get so much more mileage out of everything. And these are things that, left to his own devices, Ivar would have hit the self-destruct button on his rule and his life a while ago. So she's there almost as a foil to him to make sure that he stays in power longer. And I think the impetus for all that is self-preservation on her own part.
Okay, that all makes sense because... I was starting to think, well, you know, Lagertha inherited Hedeby after her husband was killed there. So why wouldn't the same happen here for her? And she would still maintain her rule. However, if he were to go on against her advice, he would encourage secret hate among his people.
Right.
So if he were to be taken out, there's no way that the people would allow her to rule in his place. After the fact, they'd probably take her out and their child along. So if she can try to encourage him to incur love among his people, if he were to die, she would still have a chance
of
survival.
So exactly. That's what I'm getting at. There's no hidden designs here besides almost like banal pragmatism.
I like the fact that it would be something simple like that.
It's actually refreshing because it's not this Shakespearean plot to do whatever else. And I'm actually glad that it doesn't seem to be going that way. Now, Hearst always throws us curveballs, so who knows what's going on. But the best assessment that I can get as a viewer at this point is what I've already put forth.
Okay. I like it. So next we have Fitzurk and Thora asleep, and they're startled awake by Ivar, who is crouching like a creep at their bedside. Ivar says to Fitzurk that he thinks Fitzurk could be more useful. Instead of sitting around idle, doing nothing, he suggests that Fitzurk go on a diplomatic trip to Olaf the Stout and to discuss and plan their attacks on Wessex and York. Fitzurk's not agreeable at this point, but Ivar tells Fitzurk that he can't refuse, and besides, it would be a pity if he had to burn Thora alive. And this is after proper introduction had been made between Ivar and Thora.
Finally! Finally. I mean, we didn't even know that this girl's name was Thora until, I want to say, last episode or the episode before, when you would pause it and it would actually show you, mm-hmm. you know, the name of the actress and the character that they're playing. And then now, finally, however many episodes in, she gets introduced and her name is said out loud. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what the hell took so long? I mean, I would have liked that at the very first time, you know, like, hey, you like my cool fur coat? My name's Thora. What's your name? I know you're Fitzurk.
But he says that he wouldn't kill her if Fitzurk agrees to leave first thing in the morning, which apparently Fitzurk takes him at his word.
I would have taken Thora with me.
I know.
Yeah. If I was Thora, I would have said, you're taking me with you. Because it's like, this guy threatened to burn me alive and you're leaving. You know what I mean? Like,
he didn't quite inform me how crazy your brother was.
Oh, man.
I would not have hooked up with you.
Yeah. I would have chosen better. I like when they pull away at the end of the scene and you can see the snake trail that Ivar had to leave to mm-hmm. get there. And I think it's telling that they didn't. I don't know if he did it because he had to be quiet and stealthy, but he didn't use his walking apparatus mm-hmm. to do that. He came in like that. But the fact that it's left there, it leads me to believe like that's a pretty big cinematic way to tell me that you can't take him at his word at this point. He's probably going to burn her alive next episode.
Yep.
So that sucks for her. But at least we got her name said out loud.
And we're going to be damning Fitzurk for being such an idiot.
Yeah.
Leaving her behind.
Yeah.
We shall see.
You know, and when he leaves, he says, be careful of my brother. What the hell is she supposed to do?
She knows. You don't have to state the obvious, dude.
Is she going to go to Club Med for a couple of weeks while he's gone? I mean, what are her choices here?
She needs to go find that cabin Bjorn used to hang out
in. Yeah.
All right, we are heading into our final location, Wessex. And Wessex opens the episode. It opens with Æthelred's funeral. And right as his coffin is being lowered into his crypt, Alfred walks in and he says, "Who are you burying in such fine style?" So he has woken up out of his coma and surprised everybody with this. It was interesting to me, though, the way he said, "Who are you burying in such fine style?" Because he didn't really seem worried just yet. I mean, especially that choice of words as far as like with him wondering who it was that was being buried. I wonder if he thought he was dreaming.
Huh.
I don't know. That sounds really weird. But it, just because of the way he said it, it didn't have the fear of who could potentially be being buried. But anyway, Judith tells him it's his brother, and he asks, "How did he die?" And she starts saying, "No one knows." And again, Jenny Jax does a great job, especially here, because her performance as a liar was brilliant, I thought. It is. I don't think there's a lot that goes into it, because you cast your eyes downward as you're saying the lie, but it was very effective, and I felt against her for that moment because of the
lies. In this scene?
Yeah, in that scene when she was saying that to him. I felt against her at that moment. It just bothered me so much. It was so effective.
She sells it, for sure.
Yeah.
She definitely sells it, and I feel like there's like, to us as the viewer, it's sold, but to everybody in world, it's sold really well too, because he says how, and she says, "We don't know. He just kind of fell out." Mm-hmm. And so that becomes believable because, you know, Alfred had just fallen out from something that nobody knows what it is.
Right.
And so why would it not be believable that his brother could be stricken by the same thing? Not real good for the way that all of these conspirators are going to start viewing him. Or keep viewing him, rather, because they say, "Well, shit, even his brother had that. Look at what happened to him. He went down for the count, never got back up." But it does produce a pretty believable lie. So she's kind of, Judith is crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's.
I do like how he says, "I don't believe this."
Yeah. You think she got just a little worried right there? Like, oh, shit.
He's got good instincts.
Yeah.
So we have the next scene. Judith is packing up Æthelflaed's things. She's telling her to go kick rocks, as you stated it.
Beat it. Scram.
And Æthelflaed is accusingly pointing out how Judith has behaved in regarding to Æthelred's death.
Bravely so.
Mm-hmm. Judith says, basically, like, you know, you're moving out unless you're pregnant. We did have that sex scene between Æthelred and Æthelflaed prior to his death. I do wonder if this is going to be a complication, and it may be one that's going to grow under Æthelflaed's instruction as she raises a possible usurper to a throne.
Just like Mary Catherine Gallagher when she was getting mad at Judith, like, "You're horrible.
Yeah,
you're horrible." Superstar. So yeah, I don't know if this is the last we see of her, but all these things do seem to come around eventually. Because they're just too much fun for writers to not come back to, for Hearst to just leave it off, and like an Æthelred, Æthelflaed baby would be there's something there.
Yeah, I think we're probably gonna have a time jump between season 5 and season 6, and we'll have something that develops as a result of Æthelflaed and Æthelred's last night together.
Maybe like one of the final scenes of 5B in that final episode is gonna be Æthelflaed patting a very full belly, you know, arching her eyebrow.
And, you know, if we do have that time jump, that also means we're not only losing Lagertha this season, we're probably losing Bjorn. Yeah. Anyway, I don't mean to drop that bomb. Let's just move on.
Yeah, they already kicked Ragnar off. You're risking losing a lot of viewership, especially when you only have one season left. But then again, you have nothing to lose, because it's not like you got to get your ratings up for a further season. So if that's part of the story, maybe that'll happen and they'll just tell the story. It'll be freeing in a sense.
We'll see.
Not that I'm rooting for that, but, you know, just to throw it out there.
So we do need to mention before we move on that Judith does have high appraisal of her mothering, because Æthelflaed says that she hopes that her next mother-in-law will not be like Judith. And she's like, "Oh, if he were so lucky."
It's like one of the guards in the background is like, "Well, only lucky if you're the favorite." What'd you say? Nothing. Nothing. Just folding up the ladies' clothes over here.
What?
Because he's like,
he's helping pack.
Yeah, he's just like a Monty Python guard. I didn't say anything. Nothing.
Was a guard helping with folding?
I don't know. It seemed like there was, it probably, maybe it wasn't a guard. Maybe it was like one of the, you know, the ladies in waiting or whatever, you know, the ones who help out. I'm picturing like.
It's probably like folding, like all those clothes got to be like folding a fitted sheet. So it's got to be. Well, hilarious like, to watch a guard do that.
The I'm just thinking like the John Malkovich SNL skit from like the early 90s or the late 80s, one of the two, when he was like, "You mock me," and he turns around and the guys are just like, "No, not us, we weren't doing anything," and then he turns around and they just start, you know, mocking him. That's a classic one. YouTube it if you haven't seen it.
So next we have Judith and Alfred eating at the same table where Æthelred died. Judith now sits in the chair that Æthelred had once occupied. And she wants to talk to Alfred about traitors and Æthelred.
So you think there's something there to the seating arrangement, right?
Possibly like maybe power.
The person in a secondary position of power mm-hmm. sits to the far right. Mm-hmm. And then that's why Judith was in the left-hand seat because she was acting as regent at that point.
Right. And it's the way Alfred talks to her here. He's her son, mm-hmm. but he's king. And when he says, "You better explain yourself," like, can you imagine saying that to your mom?
Not when I was his age.
Could you say it now?
If I was pissed, if I had a reason to, if I felt like I had a reason to.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I'm
I
saying?
I guess it has nothing to do with power.
No, well, it's a respect thing. Like, I wouldn't say it, like, just offhandedly. Mm-hmm. But if I had thought that she had killed my sister, and then I was like, "Yeah, you better cough up some facts, woman. What's going on with this? Talk, yeah, right now." You know, like I kind of make it sound like I would, like, you know, jump at the opportunity to do that. I would not. But his power adds another level or layer to that, to where I think he feels like he could. But it feels awkward coming from him. Like I felt like that was not badly acted. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to say that. But I mean, it feels like he's starting to exercise this muscle that is not developed yet.
I thought it was pretty on point. I mean, it felt like a slap in the face.
It was startling for sure, but I feel like he's not, my take is that he's not completely comfortable with that level of he knows that he's going to have to use it. And I think this is part of the reason why at the end of this scene, she goes off on him the way she does. It's because I think she was trying to get a reaction out of him and she got a reaction, but it's not the reaction that she wanted. You see what I'm saying?
Not really.
So she tells him, she admits that she's the one who killed him, took care of him, had to kill him because, as she says, "I satisfied myself that he was lying."
Right.
Which says that's that right there in itself. I mean, that's like, that underscores everything that I said last episode, and I'm not going to revisit it, but I feel like that makes my opinion on that solidified. She says, "I killed one son to save the other." And this is where he goes crazy. He starts flipping tables. He's wrecking shit. It's almost like there's this petulant child inside of him that's trying to be a man and have this manly burst of outrage and anger. And this is what I'm talking about. I think that Judith was trying to provoke an emotion in him, and this is what she got, and it's not what she wanted. So she's kind of grabbing him by the scruff and saying, "Look, you can't grieve like normal people. You can't behave like normal people, and you can't show your feelings like normal people, like all the things you just did. You have to be a king. You're better than that, and there's stuff on your shoulders that's not going to let you be this regular person. And you have to be able to do things that an ordinary person you have to be able to do things that an ordinary person wouldn't be able to stomach, wouldn't have on their conscience. Things against all conscience," I think is what she said.
It's almost like it's her last hurrah in motherhood here that's happening, because which is ironic because she just killed one son too, and then she's using that to be able to impart an important lesson that she feels that needs to be passed on to Alfred here. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if she got the opposite reaction she wanted. I think she got the reaction she predicted from him, with him like losing his shit and flipping tables and chairs and whatever.
Right.
And once he got that out of his system, because she even said, "Now that you're done with that," that's when she starts telling him, "You cannot behave like that anymore. Like, you are a king," and so forth.
So when you say that, you kind of put forth the idea that, or you do put forth the idea that she's sacrificing a lot, because it's not just, she's not just sacrificing her other son. She's also sacrificing her position as a mother, because you said it's kind of like her last hurrah.
I think I'm saying her last hurrah just because we have that ominous scene with her looking in the mirror. So I feel like she's discovered something mm-hmm. on her body. I would say her breast. which would make a lot of sense with losing or killing a child in the area where they would have suckled.
Oh, yeah.
Is diseased.
Huh.
So that I think we're not going to see Judith for very much longer.
So it kind of lends her a sort of veneer of nobility when you look at it through that lens, because she was willing to do all of this for England through her son, the one son. She's willing to kill the other son. She was willing to kill other people that she's had to do in the past, like Quentrith. God damn it. And, you know, like, you know, to do these nasty things that other people, she's talking about herself too, when mm-hmm. she talks about all the stuff that he has to do and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point of view, it does seem like there's some nobility in what she's trying to get accomplished.
Because she's not completely cold to the fact that she killed her son, unlike Æthelflaed says about her. She's torn up about it.
Sure, yeah. She's definitely remorseful. And
it was a huge sacrifice for her.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, we talked about that last episode too. You could, the acting that she did in that episode and this episode, mm-hmm. and the remorse you could see on her face and the confliction and things like that. That, like, the fact that I still think she was wrong for all the reasons I've already talked about, that it doesn't change how much I appreciate what she, like, how she portrayed this and how she put it forth. And even in world, her character, like, I can still see, so, you know, like, all the credit I just gave her for being willing to sacrifice everything, basically, just to make sure that England can go on.
All right, next we have Alfred receiving report of a Viking army heading towards West Wales, and he summons a Witan. And then after this Witan, Alfred meets with Ubba. And after some discussion here, Ubba figures that the Danish Vikings will have 1,000 more men. So we talked about that, like, how would he have figured that? And that was because Alfred reported to him there would be 300 ships. Mm-hmm. So if you man each ship with 10 men, that would be 3,000 men. And so that would be how he'd figure out that there would be 1,000 more men. So due to this disadvantage, Alfred thinks that he can increase their advantage, possibly if he rides up front at the head of the army. And Torvi, who has a knack for speaking the truth, says that that will not inspire fear, believe me. Just saying.
So, you know, when Judith kind of calls her out on that and says, why would you say that? And surely she understands that Alfred's not intimidating. You know, like, he rallies the troops, that he gives that morale boost that they need. And yeah, maybe they can buy into this whole thing about God being on his side or whatever. But, like,
I don't understand why it would incur fear. It seemed like it would motivate people to want to fight and try to, like, reach the king.
Yeah. It's like you're putting your best chess piece out in the front.
Yeah.
Instead of holding him back and having everybody else defend it, you're like, putting it out there so a stray arrow can just take out the leadership of this country you're trying to invade. Where's the downside for you as the invading army with that? And the only upside as the defending army is to like rally the troops and show that you've got. And you know, this worked for him in a pretty grand fashion when they fought Harold's army.
Is it, you know, do you think, like, Torvi's able to say that because she is Viking and she comes from Scandinavia, where they're so much more intimate or acquainted with their leaders? They know very well that their leaders are human. They've only just started to become deified with Ivar, so this is a new thing where the kings of England are more set apart and have, like, these reputations that are, like, kind of puffed up a little bit, maybe,
well, ruling by
the Vikings aren't going to buy into that shit,
right? Yeah, because it's a good point, because Ivar's a new jack on this whole god thing, you know, leaders being god things. But I think in England they've had that whole concept of the divine right of kings for a bit, so they honestly believe that the, you know, Christian God wants that person to
be in power,
to be king. But Alfred's being naive about this, because it's like, yeah, it worked in the battlefield against Harold, but it's kind of like rumor in Karate Kid 2, what he's fighting like, I forgot where they went, and like whatever island they were on.
Okinawa,
thank you. They were in Okinawa, and he tries to do the crane kick again, and he gets, like, pretty much slapped down. And
no, he needs the little, like, hand drums, or whatever those are called.
I used to have
my brother had one too.
Somebody got me one when I was a kid. I used to play with it. But that same old trick, it's not going to work again, and nobody's going to be intimidated by this. And Ube's like, look, you know, if you want this to work, you're going to have to let me handle it, because I'll find a way to get to them, but you're not really going to do it. And I liked the way that the history was put in there, because they talk about West Wales, and then they also say that these are Danes from their base in Dublin, Danes from Dublin. And so things have been sped up a lot, but I'm glad that I read that Vikings history book when I did, because I probably would have forgot this piece of information. But, you know, that's that they use Dublin as a staging base. Like, a lot of those places were completely controlled by Vikings at a certain point in the Viking Age, but they kind of start the Viking Age with the raid on Lindisfarne. And then, so, you know, it's only been so much time since then, mm-hmm. you know, not even a full person's lifetime, really. Mm-hmm. But so they've accelerated things a lot, but it's cool to have that history thrown in there without really batting an eyelash, because at the time that Lindisfarne was attacked, it would have been unheard of to have like a whole base of Danes at Dublin, but here they are. So it's cool to see that in there. But I like how Ube wraps this up, though. He's just like, you need to let me do this, otherwise you have no hope, you're done. And I would tend to believe that he's right, especially if they have the numbers advantage.
Numbers, and then they'll have a Ragnarsson. I don't know, but like, do the Danes care about the Ragnarssons? That'll be interesting to see, actually.
I think they're going to be aware of him. I think they're going to know, but I think their reverence won't be, it'll be kind of like a legend from a neighboring country rather than like, oh, you're a Ragnarsson, so we should just like turn around and fight with you or try to get you to fight with us. It's going to be like, well,
it'll probably be confusing.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it'll probably be like, why are you fighting for these guys?
Right. Yeah, I'm interested to see if they know who Uba is.
Yeah.
And then, so I've already talked about it, but the Wessex scenes end with Judith looking in the mirror.
Yes.
So Elswith comes in and sees her gazing at herself in the mirror, where she seems to be checking possibly a breast. It's hard to really make out, and ask her if she's okay. And she says there's really no matter. It has no point. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And she says it with like a sort of belief in what she's saying. Like, it really does not matter, you know, compared to everything else that's going on. All that matters is the king. And
which goes in line with the previous discussion we just had about all the sacrifices. So it kind mm-hmm. of cements that she's upfront and she's willing to be a certain way about it. So mm-hmm. her character going forward from the bad stuff that she did is sort of it sounds weird to say respectable, but like, she can still be a sympathetic character, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
All right, so that is our discussion for this episode. We are now going to head into feedback. And before we go into feedback, we'd just like to remind everybody to check out our website at www.noship.net. You can find more of the shows that we cover. We also have ways you can support us if you are interested. You can support us for free by writing us a review on iTunes. You can also check out our Patreon. There's a couple different levels of support on there if you want to help support us financially and get some additional material that we cover. And you can find a link to our Patreon on our website by clicking on the tab that leads you to our support page.
All right, feedback. We've got a bunch of Shield Maidens writing in tonight. It is an all-female cast of feedbackers. First up is the General, Dahlia.
Salute.
Salute. And she says, hello, no shippers. Another solid episode this week. Bless Odin. It feels like we're back in a rhythm. So, as usual, my ramblings in no particular order. Still loving the steel that Judith is displaying. From telling the truth, and quickly, to Alfred, to reminding him of his place, although I disagree in some ways, to examining the breast that Æthelred suckled from. Is that what she was doing? It was hard to tell, and I'm sure you've already discussed. My only disappointment is that it's almost like Hurst can only pick one female character a season to be complex and interesting, and this season it's Judith. Not that I'm complaining, as Jenny Jacques is killing it, as you've said in past pods, but I'd love it if he could be more even and generous in developing other female characters at the same time. There, I said it. Add this to the ongoing discussion about how female characters never age on this show.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Freydis is a little bit more interesting after our discussion. I don't know if it's necessarily accurate to what Michael Hurst is trying to depict about her, but I like it more.
At least we can have the discussions. There's enough raw material there for it.
Right, right. But you're right. She's not nearly as complex as Judith.
Right. And then you have Gunhild
further
down the list. And then Lagertha has just kind of disappeared for the time being.
Yep.
Hopefully next week, but we shall see. Dahlia goes on to say, Ivar the Benevolent? Sending Vitserk away to remove the temptation to kill him, to truly forge an alliance, to kill his girlfriend. All of the above. Maybe. Or none of the above. Who knows?
He's hard to predict.
I was so excited. I got to the 30-minute mark of the episode and realized that I had not seen Magnus at all. Then Hurst gave us a quick glimpse just to remind us he exists and is with the Vikings. Boo.
Boo.
I don't even remember seeing him.
I don't remember seeing him either.
Yeah. I mean, I trust that he was there because you're saying he is, but like he didn't register on my radar, thankfully. I had almost said that too. Like, yeah, they didn't have to make us sit through any Magnus in this episode. She goes on to say, as always, props to the DP. The lighting and framing is always beautiful in this show. Gunhild in the mirrors, the hall in Wessex for Aethelred's funeral, etc. Speaking of Gunhild, pardon my Mary Catherine Gallagher moment, but...
That's funny because you just quoted her.
Yeah.
That's funny.
In the words of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, who's zooming who? Is Gunhild truly interested in being queen? Is history repeating itself for Harold in that he'll stay true to his promise and pursue being king of all things while Gunhild waits for him? Is she spying on Harold for Bjorn? Is she her own agent? Is she playing both sides as she truly still loves her husband and is potentially loyal to Ivar? Notice she didn't say, I love you back to Bjorn.
Thank you, Dahlia. Yes, I'm with you.
But extracted the hesitant declaration just the same. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing where this journey takes us.
This means I will not be editing off anything I said about Gunhild because I was thinking about it afterwards. I was like, yeah, maybe I'm being too hard on her. I'll just edit all that off. Nope. Got some support from the general. It's staying on.
From the Pentagon. Finally, Iceland is still not any better, even though almost everyone is dead. And what was only Flatnose eating the night before he killed Eivind and Helgi? Seemed like a pretty big piece of meat, given that Eivind and his family were starving. Please tell me they did not resort to cannibalism.
Oh, man, that would be brutal. He ate a family member in front of Eivind and family, like one of their members.
I'm going to be really disappointed if that's what happened and we didn't get to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's what happened necessarily. It's kind of cool to kick that idea around. I don't believe it. I don't know what it would be, what other animal it would be.
But I mean, what would they have to do for Floki to say, all right, man, you've gone
too far.
Way too far.
Yeah, I don't know. She said, that's it for me. Looking forward to hearing all of your thoughts until we raid again, Dahlia General. Thank you, Dahlia.
Yes, thank you. Great feedback. Up next, we have Sandy. Sandy says, Hellier. Why have I not learned how to say that?
I haven't either.
And Sandy says, I love the Most Terrible Thing episode as a whole. Great details, awesome scenes, fantastic camera work, and some truly inspired dialogue. But the anachronisms are killing me here. Lace headwear a la a Spanish mantilla. Lace of this kind didn't happen for centuries. Woven designs, yes, but not the lace we see here. Lyssa Bryan and I got into it when Heckman first appeared on the scene and seduced or was seduced by a widow in church. So I think she's referring to Aethelflaed hair. Headpiece, maybe, or maybe not everybody, maybe all the women were wearing lace.
Hmm.
I remember her specifically. And Sandy says, Judith's shiny silver armor gown. So not Anglo-Saxon for the era. Women wore layers of fabric up to and over the throat generally, and the English wore a lot of wool, with silk being used carefully for embroidery and perhaps accents for the upper echelons. Wool was bread and butter, and they made good use of it. Mirrors? Glass mirrors such as Gunhild had weren't a thing until at least AD 1500. There were mirrors, yes, but they were either polished metal, durable, good for moves, workable, or perhaps uneven, rounded, convex glass that didn't function as much as we understood a mirror to be. All that being said, though, it was a great episode. Iceland had some major action that shocked me. Ketil's vengeance really surprised me. And Floki! Uba and Torvi are doing a great job in their new digs, and I like how they're making their presence known, but without compromising themselves over much at this juncture. Torvi is Viking. First, last, and always. Even as she has converted, she's still Viking, and I like that. Uba is gaining wisdom all the time. I have always liked him, and am now coming to respect him. The tragedy of Eyjord's end was awful. She's another historical person that had a lot of actual history that was killed off. I know I don't write in often, and I'm sorry for that. I spend half my Thursday writing the Shield Geeks post with Lyssa. LOL. LOL. But I listen to you guys every single week with the Vikings podcast and appreciate your words and insight a great deal. Keep those shields mended and your blade edges sharp. Thanks, Sandy.
Thanks for all of the historical corrections about the lace and the wool and everything like that. You get caught up watching this stuff, and it's kind of good to have, like, stuff like this just be pointed out just to say, like, it wasn't like that. It was probably a little bit less glamorous and a little bit more uncomfortable than it's getting, you know, presented here. It's nice to have that reality check sometimes.
Sandy and Lissa go into the history veracity aspect of the series in their recaps, which we share on our Twitter page if you guys are interested. Last episode, they went into great detail about hangings, which I found very interesting. So they're always fun to read and you should check them out, guys. And I will show their link in our show notes.
Sounds good.
For this podcast. So you guys can find them there if you don't have Twitter.
And Sandy, write in whenever you want to or as infrequently as you want to. We know you're listening and we appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you.
We have a fraction of a percent of people who write in compared to how many people who listen to us. So it's no big deal.
Yeah. Up next is Benny Jessica. She says, go west. Life is peaceful there. Hello, No Ship. So I got excited there for a while. I thought everybody on Iceland would kill each other and the Iceland story would be over. But no. Please, Floki, just sail away to America already. We can't watch this for another full season. Ivar and Judith sitting in a tree. The perfect match of psychos. I don't like Judith at all. So Albert's her favorite, but why? Because he's Athelstan's? Because he has met the Pope? Because Judith sees him as some kind of Jesus king? Because she thinks God thinks he is special? If he is sent from God, God would protect him. God would not want her to kill her own child. Athelstan would not want her to kill her own son. Stupid one-eared bat.
It's because Judith's ahead of her time, man. She believes in genetics. She knows Alfred got the goods.
I don't know. I think, we all know my opinion on this. Ivar the God, his mental illnesses multiply by the hour. So I've diagnosed him with schizophrenia and narcissism a long time ago, but now he clearly also has paranoia. Ivar can call Dr. Donuts for a second opinion if he likes. My diagnosis reads cray cray. And Ivar seems to be the asshole who started rules about who can vote and not. Swedish women didn't get their right to vote back until 1921. I hate him.
It's all his fault.
Yeah. Well, it might be. Thanks, Ivar. Appreciate that. Jesus. Bjorn, is he really this deep guy and I've just mistaken him for dumb? No, he is so dumb he sounds deep.
I do think that's a thing. But I don't know if that's necessarily Bjorn, but...
Deep Thoughts by Bjorn Ironside. What is Fitzirk up to? Is he going to try and get people to fight Ivar, or has he decided to go to India? He has that hipster yogi look with that beard that struggles to exist.
Aww.
Namaste.
It does struggle.
Yeah, not all of the Ragnarsson's got the facial hair gene. Mm-hmm. Some of them struggle with that. King Harald, my heart goes out to him. Okay, he is a member of the Kill Your Family posse with Ivar and Judith, but he is not a psycho. He is lost. He needs a break. Let him have Kattegat. The Ragnarsons will never get it together. Lagertha. I actually forgot about her.
Shame on you.
This show needs a Ragnar and some ass-kicking strong women. Nope, that one line from Hurst Kid doesn't count.
What about Judith? She had some pretty good lines when she was coaching Alfred there.
Mm-hmm. And she kicked so much ass, she killed her own fucking son last episode. Thanks. Bye. Jess.
Bye. Thank you, Penny Jessica.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, who is next?
Up next, we have Magic. Magic says, hi from Australia to both of you. Love the podcast. It's one of my faves to listen to on the drive to work. Work, by the way, is 35 minutes from where Travis grew up. Been listening since season 4 from when my boss put me into it. Thanks, Emma. She will be listening. Hi, Emma.
Hello, Emma.
I hope I meet your deadlines. This season has been a bit slower than part A of it, but I still love it. 3 episodes to go. Is Iceland all done now that everyone is dead? No more Flatnose singing Viking Metallica while satisfying his bloodlust? Surely Floki will head home now. The Ragnarsons. Ivar is channeling his best creepy cripple in this episode. The snake tracks he left behind just topped it off. If Fitzirk is destined for an important task, I hope we see what that is soon. Does Uba's request for a new place in Alfred's army make him the smartest brother, setting himself up for the future? Bjorn and his love triangle. I loved the Bjorn that was carefree and traveled the world. I hope he gets back to that person. Notice how I left out Magnus.
Well, since he's not a Ragnarsson, you don't have to include him. So.
Magnus who?
Yeah.
Will Alfred punish Judith or continue to let her do her thing? Can't wait to see how the Danes add to this show and to find out what's happened to Lagertha. Anyway, thanks again for your great podcast. And she signs off, Magic. Thanks for writing the magic.
I have to say I agree with you about Ube being the smartest brother.
I agree, too, with that.
Yeah. I think...
I'm not as on the Ube fan club as like everybody else seems to be. I mean, I like him. I just haven't been bowled over with attraction, not that it has to be sexual, towards any of the Ragnarsons of late, so...
I am on the Ube fan club. He's my favorite Ragnarson. I mean, I'm always going to have a soft spot for Bjorn because of Baby Bjorn, you know, and how we started the show with him and stuff like that. And I like all of them with the exception of Ivar. I like to watch him because he's so crazy, but I don't actually like him, obviously. But Ube, he's the one who I feel like got the most of Ragnar's pragmatism and is actually letting that play out. Like, there's no crazy subplots with him where he's like going off and having sex with strange women and like not sticking to the things he said he was going to do and letting the trappings of power get to him and all of that other stuff. And it's appreciated because, you know, leaders just tend to do that.
And Fitzhugh would get the most improved award.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd give that to him, even though it's most head up your ass award for not taking Thora with you see Olaf. But that's another story.
Yeah. He's getting back into plus one territory there.
Thank you, Magic. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Magic.
All right, up next is Raven. She says, "Hey, Em and Steve, another episode, another week, and here are some thoughts. Consequences. Judith, okay, so you kill your one son and confess it to another without consequences? Ivar, you killed one of your brothers and think that it is in your best interest to kill another one without consequences. I have a feeling that like Lagertha and Floki in earlier seasons, these two characters are about to get these consequences, but at a cost. Whatever the cost is, I don't know yet. Iceland, I haven't commented much about this storyline because I haven't thought it was interesting yet." We just don't meet any Iceland fans. We don't hear from anybody who's a fan of the Iceland storyline.
No.
Raven goes on to say, "Well, this episode has made it interesting. See, I was at Iceland last summer for a few days and recognized the waterfall, Gullfoss Falls. Am I pronouncing that right? Gullfoss?
I was saying Gullfoss.
Gullfoss, yeah. Gullfoss Falls. At the end of the episode, and was like, Eyjud, step back from the ledge. The area is slippery." Another thing is that I found it interesting that Kettle accused Eivind's wife of witchcraft because in Iceland's history in the later Middle Ages, there was a rash of witchcraft trials and the punishment for that was drowning. Other than that, I did not see Kettle killing of even Eivind's family coming. Did you think that it was interesting that Kettle, as well as Bjorn's men, was singing the same song that Rollo was singing in season one?
Ah.
Okay. I knew that song sounded familiar for some reason. Duh. All right. Good. Thank you for pointing that out, Raven. Because we're all like it's the same song that Kettle was singing that Bjorn's singing. You know, we're not even making the connection that Rollo was singing.
I like that because we're talking a lot about the death of things this episode. So you have the birth of this Viking era in season one. Mm. And now we're coming to its
conclusion,
maybe.
Full circle. I remember the singing of the song, too.
Because the culture.
Yeah, the culture. Raven goes on to say, "Parallel storyline. Just like Ragnar and Ekbert, there is a parallel story with Ivar and Alfred with a difference in a generation. The sons and grandsons get upset, they throw temper tantrums, whereas the fathers and grandfathers taking the bad news in and plot and plan. However, when Ivar gets upset, people die. Small child in season 4A, and of course Sigurd in season 4B. When Alfred gets upset, he destroys a room of objects." Anywho, these are some thoughts I had. Hope you have a great day or evening. Yeah, it's evening.
It's night.
It is nighttime.
It's past evening.
It's 10:30. Yeah, I like that. I like the pointing out of how you have these characters who, you know, their sons and grandsons are playing the parts with each other, but the way that they handled problems was so much better. So much better. And now you have brothers killing brothers and people flipping tables, and it's just like anger management is still a thing that's like centuries off, really. So like too bad for them, I guess. Thank you, Raven.
Yes, thank you, Raven. All right, up next we have Sarah, Dr. D's, or it's Dr. Donuts. And Sarah says, "Hey guys, as you know, I review this show in writing and saw a screener several days before it aired. I always wait until after I send feedback in here, though. It took me all that time to figure out what to say about it because I was honestly gobsmacked about the Iceland story. There is so much to recommend this episode. The art, the costuming, the direction, the cinematography are all flawless. so many striking scenes that will stick with me for a long time on their visual power alone. I can even step back from a literary standpoint and appreciate the tragedy of a good man finally giving into his human need for revenge. But it reminds me a lot of the Game of Thrones Arya story in Braavos, where she trains over 20-something episodes a few minutes at a time and essentially gains nothing from it but fighting skills. 16 episodes is a huge span of time to waste on everyone ending up dead, and for Eyud the deep-minded to throw herself off a cliff because she's disappointed in her father when the real Eyud lived to her old age as a badass in her own right is almost offensive in a narrative sense. Where is the arc here? Who is it for? Are all of these people just dying because Floki needs some kind of wake-up call? Yep.
Unfortunately, it seems like all the evidence is pointing that way.
Sometimes I feel I am watching a different show from other fans who seem to love this kind of surprise, or that Ivar is screaming fascism into Kattegat or whatever, and this is one of those times I didn't like it at all, and I don't like that Fitzurk is stupidly leaving Thora behind. Flips dinner table like Alfred.
You should have taken her with you, so stupid.
I did love that the anachronistic mirrors invite us to speculate on Judith's latest moves. I think she's dying. And what angle to see Gunhild's motives from. I'd love for her to be cleverly playing both men to her advantage, as neither are the strongest strategists. I was joking with the Shield Geek Sandy and Lissa on Twitter that Bjorn must need violence as a motivator for investing his heart. Maybe Torvi should have punched him in the face, and then we'd all be singing a different tune, eh? Anyway, big letdown for me this week. Hoping for better things next. Dr. D's. Yeah, that was my initial thought about this episode. I think, you know, the strongest thing for me was Judith and Alfred.
Everything that went on in Wessex stood out for me. That was, it's... Wessex is winning the day, really. Like, as far as, you know, general consensus is we can do away with Iceland. And it looks like we pretty much have this episode. There's not a whole lot to do unless Kettle's going to start killing members of his own family or try to kill Floki or something. Like, that's like the only thing that you can do without everybody who's remaining getting on a boat and getting the fuck out of there.
But as Sarah mentioned at the beginning of her feedback, she does write reviews on Vikings, and I will share a link to her review in our show notes as well. And last episode, she went into great detail about the possible reasons behind Alfred's illness. So you guys should check that out. And we also share it on Twitter.
I like the comparison as well to the Game of Thrones Arya storyline, but at least with that, you got, like, she became, like, a total badass. You know, say, like, she just got some fighting skills, but, I mean, she learned how to be one of the faceless, right?
Yeah.
So,
and we still have potential for that to,
yeah, like, the
bloom in a way that we'll appreciate.
You know, what happened with Kettle just deciding that he was going to kill everybody at Aven's house was nowhere near as cool as what she did, you know, with the red wedding redux, calling it for a lack of a better term. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes, thank you, Sarah.
All right, up next is Sophie Fatale, and she says, "Hi guys, I need to clarify my pessimistic remarks from last week. I think the problem is that I don't really care about any of the characters anymore, and I was never a big fan of the England stuff, and that's where most of the action is this season. I agree with M regarding Ube being the most interesting Ragnarsson, and I care a little about him. I like Alfred and enjoy watching his resolute leadership style. I hope those two character arcs can carry it enough for me. I really want to love the show again, but at the moment I find myself zoning out and checking my phone. So, episode 17, Iceland still sucks, Bjorn is in love, Harald has some secret plan or just likes his new throne. Alfred threw it. Alfred, it feels really good. It feels good on my bottom, Bjorn Ironside. Alfred threw a tantrum. Judith was checking her breasts for lumps. And what's next for Fitzurk? Take care, you guys. Sophie Fatale."
Did I say Upa was the most interesting? I feel like I might have said that about Fitzurk. Don't mean to disappoint you, Sophie.
Yeah, I think Sophie might be getting our sentiments about Ube confused.
You find Ube the most interesting.
Yeah. I'm on the Ube bandwagon with a lot of people, apparently. But when it's justified, I feel like.
Well, Fitzurk was more interesting until really the last episode and a half.
There's still three to go.
Yeah.
So he still has room to do stuff, and I totally agree. You hit the nail on the head when you said that he gets the most improved award.
He does.
Yeah, I mean, you said that, right?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah, like okay. 10 minutes ago.
Thank you, Sophie.
Yes, thank you, Sophie. And my goodness, just in the nick of time, we got another piece of feedback from Nancy.
Yeah, we're actually recording late tonight.
Yeah.
So this showed up while we were recording.
So Nancy says, I don't get this title. What is the very bad thing? It's the one that Ivar presided over. That's like the most terrible thing. They are right about that.
I can see the seer from beyond the grave. This is the worst thing ever.
Nancy says, is it what Judith was doing with her robe undone? The most terrible thing is what she was doing. I'm sorry. Sorry, Nancy. That's funny. Are we supposed to believe she was masturbating? No! No!
Keep going.
Breast exam, shaving. It will be interesting to learn what the significance of that scene was. Shaving. Well, I mean, they're already really anachronistic. Why not throw in some more?
Well, I mean, what's next? I mean, we're throwing out all kinds of stuff here. Is she Buffalo Billing? I'd fuck me. like what?
Nancy goes on to say, Iceland, still don't care. Seriously, make it stop. And as I'm writing this, I realize this is the very bad thing. Yeah, still don't care. Okay, I know I'm not supposed to overthink fiction or even historical fiction, but every once in a while, Vikings does this thing to pull you out of the story, where you're thinking more about the plausibility factor rather than the story. This week, it was Gunhild riding up on York and getting the 5-star sleeping quarters and fancy night clothes. These overnight romances with undying love is really getting old. All that being said, this is one of the best shows out right now. The acting is still phenomenal, and the writing is still exciting. The art direction, editing, costumes, and music are just as good, if not better than Game of Thrones. Thank you guys again for a fun podcast. No one I know is watching right now, so I have no one to talk to about it. Hubby is 3 episodes behind. What?
Oh, that's got to be frustrating, Nancy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just like you just want to like put him in a room when he has some free time and be like, catch up so we can talk. You know?
Like, I'll do your household chores for you while you catch up.
It'll be worth it. It will be worth it. So the whole thing about Gunhild and the 5-star sleeping quarters and the fancy night clothes. Yeah, I do agree with what you're saying when you say, like, specific criticisms aside, this is still one of the best shows out there. I usually end up saying something along those lines every season. And the super good season of Game of Thrones, whatever it was a couple of years ago, 1 or 2 seasons back when all this stuff was happening, a lot of people were like, man, I wish it was as good as Game of Thrones, but I wasn't watching the Game of Thrones at the time, and I caught up with that later. You know, that particular season, I was behind. And so when I did catch up, I was like, oh, now I see what everybody was talking about. But on par, I would mostly rather watch Vikings because, I don't know, I just feel a closer link with the characters. So I agree with you there, Nancy. And thank you for your feedback.
Yes, thank you. It was very funny. I enjoyed reading it.
And that does it for another episode of The Wild Hunt. It is time to go to bed.
Time to go to bed.
So this has been...
I am so tired.
Till we read again, this has been a No Ship Network podcast. I am your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em. Axe time. Axe time.
Shield time.
No.
It's not shield time?
It's shields are splintered.
Oh.
It's sword time.
Wow. Let's just do this. Let's not do that. Let's just say till we raid again, and we'll do it the other way around. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
Till we raid again. You're Frody.
You're Duty.